You're listening to Wolves Potluck.
And hey everyone, welcome to Books and Boba, a book club and podcast featuring books by Asian and Asian American authors. My name is Marvin Yeh.
And I'm Rira Yu.
And welcome to our May 2025 mid-month book news check-in, where Rira and I go over the latest Asian American publishing and book news. And I guess happy Asian American, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islander Heritage Month. The 1 month that we exist in the eyes of the mainstream. And quite possibly,
I'm surprised we even have a Heritage Month this year.
Quite possibly our last Heritage Month in the current era. Because, correct me if I'm wrong, but Heritage Month celebrations are totally DEI, right? It's like corporate diversity.
I mean, according to mainstream corporate culture, you know. But I was just like, do we still have a Heritage Month this year? And you know it. It happened. I'm so glad that the community is still doing stuff. Like, you know, we have like the LA Pacific Asian Film Festival that's happening right now. And I'm sure like other like local events in other states are happening. So I'm like, okay, cool. Like, hopefully this is not our last hurrah.
Yeah. And let's not, you know, we can dig deeper into why Asian programs may be less affected because proximity to whiteness and all that. There's a lot to unpack there that I don't think. Well, I mean, we are kind of equipped on this podcast because we talk about these themes all the time. But, you know, let's not get bummed out right away. There'll be plenty of time for that later on in our news.
I don't want to talk about it every single time. But like, last month, because I was traveling, Marvin did the mid-month for April. So how did that go, Marvin?
It was okay. Don't have the research experience that you have, but I did pay for a day pass at Publishers Marketplace and just scoured the publishing announcements. You know, in this line of work, you have to kind of like, you know, I don't know how you do it, Rira. I'm sure it's hard, but it's like sometimes I just have to Google every author to make sure that whether or not they're Asian or not, right?
I feel like I've like gotten used to some names, so like it's in my mental catalog. If it's a new author, then obviously I'll like look them up. And it helps that Publishers Weekly, they have like headshots of the authors. And also, like, because our community is like very supportive of each other. Like, I'm on Threads, I'm on Instagram, so like, whenever like authors that I follow are like being like, "Oh my god, like my friend or this person, like their book deal was announced, hooray!" That's kind of how I like keep track. It's a very like, I don't know, like a very nebulous thing where it's like, okay, just like follow where your author friends go and just kind of be nosy.
Yeah. It also helps to be kind of chronically online, which, you know, is a double-edged sword. But I think, yeah, it was okay. I think this is the second time I've done a solo book news. Because last time I think it was also wedding related. I think you were out of town or for something.
Yeah, maybe.
Oh, no, you were in London. It was during a Europe trip.
Oh, so it was around the same time because that was also like my birthday trip. So maybe it'll be a tradition going forward.
The annual Marvin solo episode.
Yeah. Like, I wonder if people were just like, wait, where's Rira?
I let them know you're busy, and if you want to learn more about Rira's trip, we do talk all about it in this month's Boba Chat. And what a wild time, Rira. I didn't even tell you
all of it, Marvin. I told you like maybe 70% of what happened.
There
on
was
this
more.
Trip.
Wow.
There was freaking more. And like I had to speed run through a lot of like some of the family drama stuff. But just keep in mind that happened while I was dealing with all the other stuff that I was telling you.
Yeah. So if you're interested in hearing more about Rira's travel adventures, her odyssey, if you will, you can do that while also supporting us at Books and Boba by becoming a Patreon supporter. As always, our book club is supported in part by our listeners. So if you'd like to become a bigger part of the book club, head on over to patreon.com/booksandboba, where as a Patreon supporter, you gain access to our members only Discord server. And if you join at the Honey Boba level, you also gain access to our monthly Boba Chats, which is our bonus podcast that we just talked about, as well as the ability to help us pick one of our book club picks every quarter. I apologize if I'm a little like frazzled today. It's been quite a week. I've spent the week in my parents' house because they're out of town, they're out traveling, and we ran some pest issues in our home, so like we're kind of hunkering here while my mother-in-law sprays the entire house. But my dad has taken over my bedroom, and there's like no room for me here.
Is it just like a storage space, or no, is he actually like using your bedroom?
He uses my bedroom as his office, but I'm staring at like all his Star Wars paraphernalia. He has like a giant A New Hope poster. I'm staring at a Darth Vader like figurine.
That's cute.
The one downside is that my parents are instant coffee drinkers, so I'm drinking some shitty coffee right now. But you know. We'll make it work.
You didn't bring your own like coffee.
I run a pour over.
Don't you have like a pour over? Yeah.
Yeah. It's just okay. Not to like get into.
We'll get
life.
Into news and deals yeah. soon, but like I promise. But yeah.
When you travel with babies specifically or like kids, you bring a lot of shit. I talked about this a little bit on Boba Chats as well. We got a minivan because we have twins and we are a minivan family now. And there's no room for my stuff in that car when we head over, especially if we're doing overnight trips. So I had to sacrifice my good coffee. And now I'm drinking, I think this is just Folgers, which not great.
So you have
great,
to use like a regular coffee machine? Like,
no, not
they don't
even.
Have, like...
This is like the instant crystals, like the stuff
is
an Asian household, you know, Asians.
Is it like Maxim? Like the things
Maxwell
that
House,
come in the package?
Kind of. It's like, it's in a giant container. So you just, they're like the freeze-dried coffee crystals. You just mix it into hot water and then voila, shitty coffee. So
I will say like when I was traveling, I was surprised that my Japanese hotels had like really good coffee. because when I was putting my itinerary together, like I had a list of coffee shops that were like, I was like, okay, it was vetted. So these are good coffee shops. And my hotel was doing like a collab with one of the coffee shops on my list. Oh. So yeah, they had like, they had like the kettle, like the fancy kettle. And then they had like the individual like coffee bags. It was kind of like tea bags.
Okay,
so
like
get
the pour over like... Or the steep.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, dude, like, it's so fancy. I was expecting like Maxim powder because I'm in Asia. But Japan was like, no. Like,
yeah,
we're giving you the good stuff.
Next level. They care about your experience, which, yeah. You know.
Marvin and I are like, I mean, Marvin's more of like a coffee connoisseur than I am because like I genuinely don't care as long as it's not like instant coffee. So, but I can tell when the coffee is like actually like really, really good.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll get off coffee talk soon, but I've been zeroing in on like the best pour technique for my, like I use a Hario V20. And you know what sucks about brewing your own coffee these days is the beans are getting more expensive.
That's true because of the tariffs. Yeah. Yeah. The only place you can really get it is, like, in America is Hawaii, right?
Yeah.
And they only have, like, a small, like, like a small percentage. I think it's only, like, 2% of, like, the world's coffee.
Yeah. It's climate-based, right? You need a certain specific, like, ecosystem to grow good coffee. It's like tea. Like, that's why a lot of tea comes from China and Taiwan. There's just a certain condition. It's like wine, right? It's like why they grow, why... California is
the
a good
tea
place
tariffs
to...
are going
to
be high too. We just need another Boston Tea Party, but like have it like be coffee.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't see how you can do that without just being racist again.
Anyway, this was our you know, coffee talk and polita talk.
Yeah, but we're gonna, you know, it's a mini Boba Chats. If you like this banter, if you like this type of just off the cuff, become a Patreon supporter and listen to our Boba Chats, where we just do this for like an hour. Two hours this past Boba Chats, if you come.
I did not expect it to be that long, but you know, I had a lot to go through. If you guys are Honey Boba members, like, please go on Discord and tell me your thoughts on my Odyssey, because
it is wild.
Because I'm just like very curious as to like see like what you guys thought of all of my traumatic adventures. Anyway, we are going to move on to book deals.
Yeah.
So our first book deal is Harlequin imprint Mira acquired in an exclusive submission, Susan Lee's adult debut, Julia Song is undateable. The CEO of a Rising K beauty brand reluctantly agrees to let her grandmother set her up on 3 dates, a plan that is soon complicated by the old friend who steps in as her dating coach. Publication is set for fall 2025.
This sounds fun. This sounds like a...
This sounds so
like a
Korean.
K-drama, right?
This sounds so Korean as fuck. I have a friend who, you know, she... Like, her mom lives in Korea, and she, like, lives here. So she goes to visit her mom in Korea, like, every so often. And every time when she goes, her mom tries to set her up on dates. And just, like, one year, She was like, okay, I'll go on those dates. And she like crammed like 4 dates into 1 day. She was just like going through these guys. And she was, and like the reason why she was going through all these guys so quickly was because she really wanted to play League of Legends. So, so she was just like, my game time, you're sacrificing it. You better be like worth it. So I think she went on like she clearly went on like over 20 dates. So this is a thing that Korean parents do, actually.
I mean, leave it to a gamer to find a way to min-max their dating experience, right?
Yeah.
And Harlequin is like, they do steamy books, right? They're like the...
They're romance, not necessarily like steamy books. But Susan Lee is part of the Kim Chingus, and we're planning to have her on the podcast soon. I'm excited to have her. her on the show.
Yeah, watch out for that. All right. Next up, Holiday House has bought Shoebox Dreams by Qing Zhuang, a picture book that follows a newly immigrated Chinese family building their life from scratch in New York City as they sell shoes on the sidewalk to make ends meet and use the art of shadow puppetry made from the shoeboxes to remember the past and dream of a better future. Publication is scheduled for spring 2027. I wonder if this is a historical.
Yeah, I was thinking the same. Yeah, because selling shoes on the sidewalk, that's like an old trait that you don't really see that much anymore.
Yeah, I feel like these days, like, you don't see much like street peddlers because, you know, laws. So I feel like this is like New York City in like maybe like the late 1800s, early 1900s.
I don't think it's that old. Like maybe like the 90s, I was thinking.
90s.
Yeah, because like the policies were a lot laxer back then. People kind of did
maybe
what
like the
they 80s, want. Yeah.
I don't know. This feels older to me. This feels like first wave Chinese immigrants, but it could also be because I feel like the 80s, that immigration wave was more affluent.
It's a little
families.
Different.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So looking forward to learning more about this book. You know, I'm, you know, more interested in children's books these days just because I have kids of my own. And 2027 is perfect timing for reading books to my kids. So, congrats to Qing on their book deal. And looking forward to seeing who's right, me or Rira, on when this book is actually set.
Yeah. And also the shadow puppetry stuff sounds really interesting in terms of illustration. Mm. All right. Our next book deal is Penguin imprint Nancy Paulson Books bought Roar by Varsha Bajaj, a middle grade novel about a boy from Texas who visits his grandfather at a tiger sanctuary in India, where he joins him in the fight to protect a tigress and her cubs from developers and poachers, a story that also provides an intimate view of the tiger's world. Publication is slated for summer 2026.
Love it. Learning about tiger ecology and also fighting the power, fighting capitalists. And,
what was that documentary that like came out on Netflix, Tiger King? That was about like a corrupt a corrupt guy who ran a so-called tiger sanctuary. But
I know
it was just
what
like,
you're talking about. I never watched it because I just wasn't. Yeah, I think it was Tiger King.
Yeah, Tiger King.
Yeah. About like a he was like a Florida man, right?
Yeah. I think wild tigers, they've, you know, increased the population, but like not by much. Mm-hmm. So like a lot of the tigers that you see are like the tigers that you see at like zoos and sanctuaries. Wild tigers, they look pretty different from like pictures that I've seen. Maybe it's because their diet is not as robust as the sanctuary and zoos. But yay, books about protecting your environment and, you know.
And fighting developers. Truly the villains of the current day. All right. Next up, Quilltree has acquired in a 2-book deal Kendari Blake's The Stolen Queen, about a girl who finds herself hosting an ancient god in her mind as she attempts to find that deity a permanent vessel and claim her true destiny. Publication for book one is scheduled for winter 2027 and book two in winter 2028. So Kendari Blake's also an author that we've heard about a lot on this podcast. Haven't had a chance to read one of her books or talk to her, but I'm happy for a chance to do that with a new upcoming book. She does really love her like queen.
Her dark fantasy.
Yeah. Dark fantasies. Right.
I love it.
I remember, her, was it Two Dark Crowns or what was her debut novel? But I remember seeing the international cover when I was in Taiwan 1 year, and just it was just so much cooler than the American cover.
Three Dark Crowns.
Yeah.
Yeah, because like the American cover is just literally just three crowns, but the Asian covers
was anime had as like, fuck. Yeah.
Yeah. It had like illustrated, it looked like manga covers pretty much, though. So. Yeah, I don't know why, but like this, the premise for The Stolen Queen reminds me of Yu-Gi-Oh!
I mean, technically, it's the same, right? It's the same.
Yeah, because you have like an ancient god figure. I mean, not to say that Yami is a god figure, but close enough. You know, like taking over a body. Yeah. Kind of gives me Yu-Gi-Oh! Vibes.
Yeah.
Sorry, Kendara.
I'm sure she's flattered. Also reminds me of The Poppy War by R.F. Kuang, because that also involves a main character with a god stuck in her mind. And it allows for a lot of, you know, opportunity for banter with like a deity that does not understand humans or emotions sometimes, or just like is just, you know, they're always jerks, right? The deity in your head. It's always like, why not just kill them?
Yeah. They're like, you know how in Mulan there's like the great stone dragon? It's like that's probably what the stone dragon would have been if Mushi hadn't like broken the statue.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, Groundwood Books bought world rights to Ah Ma's Home, written by Jillian Tse and illustrated by Leah Hong, about a grandmother who shares memories of village life in China with her granddaughter against the backdrop of the changing season and animals preparing for the winter. Publication is planned for fall 2026. I'm already like, I'm just like, aw, grandma.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, grandparent books are such a, you know, we see them a lot in our book deals, but that's because I think
it's because
we all forget
this,
to talk to our parents sometimes, right? Yeah.
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 This gen of authors who, you know, it's just like they either don't talk to their parents and they have like fonder memories of their grandparents, or they're just starting to get into like their family history.
Yeah. And, you know, it makes sense because especially Asian families, people don't like to talk about the past, especially if the past involves poverty or hardship. And so, you know, stories like this can be the gateway for kids asking about where their parents or their grandparents came up. So yeah, always great to see books like this to bridge those generational chasm is too dramatic a word. Gaps. That's much more reasonable.
Also, like, this is a picture book, so I can just imagine all of the illustrations of the village to be like really gorgeous. I follow this YouTuber. I think her name is like Lizzie Chi. She like lives in an actual village in China. It's like a remote village in China, and her vlogs are just about her daily life. And she like making food from scratch, and sometimes like making clothing from scratch. And I'm like, wow, people used to live like this. Like, I mean, like, she's living like this, but by choice, you know? So, yeah, like, I'm just kind of picturing the same, like, tasks.
Yeah.
The grandmother probably had in this book.
Yeah. All right. Our next deal. Coca-Cola has acquired The Oaks Are Not Okay by Grace K. Shim. Pitched as Schitt's Creek meets Minari. The Oaks Are Not Okay is a YA novel about 17-year-old Elena Oak and her fast fashion empire family who lose their fortune overnight and move from LA to a California farming town and reconnect with their Korean farming heritage and each other while discovering how to help their new community and themselves thrive along the way. Publication is set for spring 2026.
So this is
Forever 21, right?
I do love Schitt's Creek, so I could just imagine the family dynamics being so kooky.
Yeah, this sounds like a lot of fun. You know, always love a story about rich people having to do regular ass things and
farming of all things, like the hardest thing that you can do. Oh, how the mighty falls.
Yeah, I can't wait to see all the shenanigans. This sounds like a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to learning more next year.
All right. Next up, Roaring Brook Press acquired When Shadows Burn by Vanessa Lay, the author of The Last Blood Carver. This YA/adult crossover dark fantasy duology follows a demon caller and a demon slayer who partner together to solve a string of occult murders at their university. Publication of the first book is scheduled for fall 2026. Ooh, gothic.
Yeah, with some dark academia and murder mystery. All things that we like.
I think it's because of my weeaboo brain, but like Demon Slayer, I was like, oh, Demon Slayer, the anime.
Yeah, and the Demon Summoner. I mean, it's a lot of genre tropes mashed together. But I think that's something that Vanessa does really well. I remember, you know, we had her on the show to talk about The Last Blood Carver, which is mixing medical drama with fantasy and Southeast Asian folklore, right? So I think, you know, that's something that a lot of our authors that we cover on this podcast do really well, which is mash up their inspirations and genres because that's what being Asian American is. So yeah, congrats to Vanessa on her new upcoming duology. All right, next up, Scholastic acquired World Rights to At 15, written by Remy Lai and illustrated by Basha Tran. In this YA graphic novel, 15-year-old Frankie tries to escape the realities of her father's cancer diagnosis by throwing herself into her first romantic relationship. Publication is scheduled for fall 2027. Man, what an ill-advised solution.
This sounds like something a 15-year-old would do. Very age appropriate, I would say.
Yeah, definitely something you do, like a solution you come up with when your frontal lobe isn't very developed, right? And
I can see adults doing this too, though. But it's just like more likely with a 15-year-old. It's like, oh, like, you know, you're dealing with something so difficult at home, like a family member having cancer. And it's like, okay, let me run away from my problems and pour all of my energy into a romantic relationship. And I'm like, other people can't be your escape, you know? You have to.
And like poor the other person, but you know, who knows? Like they might just be toxic and this might be, you know, there's a lot of ways the story could go, I hope. But in the end, it is a YA graphic novel. So, you know, I'm expecting at least a heartwarming catharsis when she realizes she needs to spend time with her dad, right?
I feel like this is like a recipe for chaotic codependency. Mm. And that's not great.
Yeah. But yeah, congrats to Remy and Basha on the book deal.
All right. Next up, First Second Bought in a Preempt, Friday Nights in Chinatown by Michelle Lam, the author of Mish the Bad Demon. And this is a historical fiction YA graphic novel inspired by her parents' love story and West Side Story. And it's about two teens in 1980s Chinatown who must balance falling in love with the realities of their dreams and the threat of gang violence. Publication is planned for winter 2028. Oh, so like, okay, parents' love story. Like,
does this mean her parents were like rival gang members? From, like, rival
I mean, I feel like that part is fictional, but who knows, right?
Right. It could have just been rival restaurant families, right? I think that's more like, or like, you know, one person runs the like rival souvenir shops or something in Chinatown, or yeah, like rival grocery stores in Chinatown or something.
Or it could be like class differences, you know, it's just like, oh, my son is headed for like the good life of going to be a doctor and you're just a shop owner daughter or something. I don't know. We're just like making fan fiction based on this premise, but it can be a lot of things. But I just love how this is inspired by her parents' love story, because I feel like a lot of parents from like that generation, not a lot of love stories, a lot of marriages of convenience and, you know, just based on survival. So,
yeah, I mean, they're both teens in 1980s Chinatown, a time when New York was pretty chaotic, right? New York was not like the version of New York we have today.
It's funny how we were talking about like 80s Chinatown earlier because of a different book, and it's just like, oh yeah, like historically that's when like more affluent Chinese families immigrated, so who knows, it could be a lot of things.
All right, well, but congrats to Michelle on the book deal, and looking forward to seeing the story come to life in 2028. All right, next up, Free Spirit has acquired road rights to Arlo All Over Again, written by Sayuri Stabrowski and illustrated by Dave Sezele. The picture book celebrates the magic of unexpected friendships on a snowy day in the city, when Oliver, a reserved and cautious boy, meets the bold and spirited Arlo. The two form a bond that helps Oliver step out of his comfort zone and try new things. But when the snowstorm that brought them together melts away, Oliver is left wondering if he'll ever see Arlo again. Publication is slated for winter 2026.
Leave the introverts alone.
You know, I don't know if anything. I'm not familiar with snow days. I did not grow up in a place with snow days.
I mean, snow days are a little bit different now from when I had snow days. I mean, I sound so fucking old, but it's because I am old. Back in my day, we didn't have cell phones, so either the school would call you, but usually they would call you after the news would announce which schools were closed. So you would just wake up early and watch the news and hope that your school's name was listed in like the cancellations. So,
yeah. I mean, you say leave the introverts alone, but it sounds like Oliver really loved playing with Arlo, the extrovert. So, you know, maybe he just needed a friend to bring.
Yeah. Okay. Like, listen, with like introverts, the only way we make friends is when an extrovert adopts us and that extrovert friends like collects friends, and that's how you become friends with other people. That has been the case for me for many, many years. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
So it's great that we have a picture book that can be used as like a sort of manual on how to make friends or how these friendships work. But you know, it sounds really cute. I hope that Oliver, you know, finds his friend again. I'm sure he's local, so he's gotta, maybe Oliver needs to step out and go into the world.
Again, yeah.
Sorry, not to make the introvert do anything they want to do. No. But
listen, when you're a child, when you're like, you know, developing your frontal lobe and you need to socialize, yeah, you're like, you should go out and try new things. But when you're older and you decide that, you know, the introvert life is for you and you would like your peace, then more power to you.
Yeah.
Anyway, our next book deal is Sora Books acquired Love Language by Christine Ko, a middle grade novel in verse about a Korean American girl whose family returns to South Korea, where she explores different languages one can love and be loved in, with themes of immigration, family, and belonging. Publication is scheduled for August 2026. Ooh.
So like
back to Korea. Like, I don't know how old this character is, but that's hard.
I mean, middle grade novel, I'm assuming probably, you know, 10, 11, 12, right?
Yeah, that's hard, you know, like, even if you're fluent in Korean, like going to like a Korean school and just dealing with the cultural changes. Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah. I feel like though most people that go back to the mother country as like a, you know, fully formed child, typically they get sent to like an international school, right? Or like American school.
No, because you need to be a citizen of a different country in order to go to international school.
I mean, she's a Korean American girl, so
one could assume. Because because this could have been my life. We talked about this in the EJ Ko episode, the magical language of others. And yeah, like I was like a green card holder for most of my American childhood. So it's like if I had gone back to Korea, like my parents had originally planned, I would not have been able to go to international school without some hefty negotiation and tuition, like tuition stuff. So it's yeah.
But yeah, it sounds like a charming, you know, reverse fish out of water story. Is that what this story is, right?
I hope this book is like more lighthearted, you know? Like I hope the kids that the girl hangs out with at school are not bullies.
Yeah.
I hope people are like welcoming and, you know, they're like, you know, exchanging, like they're like practicing each other's languages, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I hope it's lighthearted.
I mean, love languages seem to be like a theme in the story. So hopefully, you know, it's about, you know, connecting with grandparents, finding out that, hey, my parents do love me, actually, and are not trying to ruin my life by moving us back to Korea. All these great, like,
we're projecting a lot.
But yeah, congrats to Christine on the book deal. And for our last deal of this episode, Random House has secured North American rights at auction to Instar by Sabrina Imbler. The book explores the biology of insects, molting, and metamorphosis alongside Imbler's meditations on transitioning, stages of life and death, and relationship to disgust, reflecting on the simple but profound truth that no body is fixed in time and that we are all always in the process of becoming ourselves. No publication date has been set.
It sounds really deep and introspective.
Yeah.
I would be kind of scared to read a book like this. It sounds like a book where, you know, you kind of learn that everybody is evolving and, you know, there isn't like a perfect version of ourselves because we're constantly evolving. But it's hard to say. This book might just be out of my depth, but
yeah,
It's an adult.
Feels
book.
Like nonfiction, or is it?
It feels like it's nonfiction.
Okay, yeah, it sounds like this book tries to connect, you know, the natural world of insects with the more internal world of, you know, self-actualization, selfhood. So yeah, sounds like a pretty very deep book to read.
Yeah, introspective book. Yeah. All right, so that is it for our book deals, and we're going to move on to book news. So this time around, I collected news that are like more broad, but we're going to start off with news that specifically have to do with Asian American authors. So we have some Asian American authors who hit the New York Times bestsellers list. Yay. Tahereh Mafi's Watch Me is now a number one New York Times young adult hardcover bestseller, and it's been number one for the past 4 weeks. So congratulations to Tahereh. And the book is set in the Shatter Me universe, and the first book in the new series takes place 10 years after the fall of the Reestablishment. And we also have Axie's O, The Floating World, which became a New York Times bestseller in the young adult hardcover category. I don't have the rank here, but just the fact that Axie made it to that list is incredible. The book is loosely based on the Korean myth of the Celestial Maiden and Woodcutter, and follows an amnesiac sword for hire and a theater troupe performer with mysterious powers as they discover that their destinies will change the fate of multiple worlds. We're planning to have Axie on our show soon to talk specifically about this book. So great timing. Congratulations to Axie as well.
Yeah. Always cool to see our Asian American authors on the New York Times bestsellers list. I feel like, you know, I feel there should be more, but always great to get some recognition when we can. Not familiar with the Shatter Me universe. Is that, I assume that's her previous.
It's so popular. It is so popular. And like, I'm just so glad that there's like so much love for Mafi's books.
Yeah. And, you know, Axie's book. We've been wanting to have Axie on the show for a long time. She writes, genre fiction that I like always vibe with, and I'm glad to finally have a chance to chat with her about her works. So yeah, look forward to that, because I'm definitely looking forward to having her on the show.
Yeah, yeah. I actually got to meet her in person at like a book event, and I was like, "You, you need to come onto our show." And she was like, "Oh, I'd love to." So, I'm sure we're gonna have a great time. All right. So our next piece of news is actually kind of funny and kind of sad at the same time. So there was this convention called the A Million Lives Book Festival, and it was marketed as a convention for authors and readers of the popular genre romantasy. And it was advertised to have, you know, all these things, a vendor hall, panels, a content creation room, fandom cosplay meetups, a cosplay competition, and, you know, a ball of like a fantasy themed ball. And the tickets ranged from $50 to $250 for the attendees. Now, the convention was held in Baltimore on May 2nd and 3rd, and it was quickly dubbed by the attendees as the Fire Festival of Book Talk. So just imagine how bad it was for people to give it that nickname.
I feel like, didn't this also happen to like a Bridgerton event?
It happened multiple times. The Bridgerton event, I think, was also in Baltimore. So it's very reminiscent of the Bridgerton ball, that kind of like, that was just sad and broken. Also the Willy Wonka experience where they had just like,
but that, one, that became a meme, though. That had some like cultural significance, right?
And then like there was another event where it was kind of similar. But yeah, this has become a trend that everyone is kind of getting tired of. Like, you know, please, if you want to make like a cool event, hire professionals. This is like a career thing. Like, yeah, you can't just make an event with that many people involved just by like, you know, slapping things together.
As someone who it was a career, or it was a job to, you know, slap things together, like to create events, you can create a, like the core driving like strategy in event planning is always to, it's all about the attendee experience and making sure they don't know how little money you have in creating, in like running things, right? It's like, I've done plenty of scrappy events.
Like, okay, but like scrappy events though, like think of, you can't do a scrappy event with a romantasy themed ball, you know? It's supposed to be opulent and have like fantasy elements. That's the thing. You can't scrape by with just scrappy money.
That's the thing. Like, you can, if you have someone who's really good at like stretching a budget and doing a decoration, making it like the whole thing is like, you can pull it off if you have people who know how to like work a room or how to like decorate a room with like limited resources. And
we'll talk about decorations in a bit, but
these types of events, like it's a passion project, right? Like obviously, like it feels like the people running the project, it's obviously like a scam. It's a money grab for them. They're like, oh, there's all these people who are willing to pay $250 to come be together, and they're counting on the attendees to bring the vibe instead of creating a vibe themselves, which should be like, if you're getting this much money from the attendees, that money should be reflected in the production. The whole point of charging $250 to attend is to pay for the production. And, you know, cynically, I'm thinking they probably just pocketed all that money, right? Like,
I don't know. Like, I'll fill in the details a little bit more. So, the authors were promised 500 to 1,000 attendees, but the event barely had 30 attendees, according to some TikToks.
Okay.
So 30 people showed up to this thing that expecting, you know, like a grand convention for romantasy lovers. And it was a complete bust. And the authors had to like pay for their tables. There were more author vendors than attendees, which is nuts to me.
Yeah.
And the highly anticipated fantasy themed ball was very far from fantastical, because it took place in an empty conference room with zero decorations, not a single balloon in sight. The ball was only available to attendees who bought the most expensive ticket, the $250. And there was no food, and the water and drinks were available purchase only at a cash bar. And the only music at the ball was from a speaker that a security guard was holding.
Okay.
Can you picture it now?
Yeah. At best, this is a management group that went in over their heads and had no idea what to do. At worst, this is just like they didn't care.
So the organizer of the event, they posted a video on TikTok apologizing to the attendees and promising to refund anyone who asked for their money back within the month. And the apology was kind of, I don't know, it was very subpar. They said, "I do understand that the ball tonight was not up to standards. There were a lot of issues getting set up and it was not set up well." I'm like, yeah, I mean, I feel like I've seen like proms by underfunded public schools that are way, way more opulent than an empty conference room with zero decorations.
I feel like the wild part to me is the fact that so many authors attended, which
can you blame them?
Unless we're talking about like, are these So in terms of like vibe checks, I guess the company passed the vibe because like we get pitched a lot of stuff, like, you know, as like content creators, like we get pitched a lot of, you know, books, a lot of events. And let me tell you, 90% of the pitches don't pass the vibe check, right? You take a look at it, it's like, this is like, obviously.
This is AI.
This is someone,
a copy and paste.
Like, this is not like a serious event or a serious, you know, ask. So I wonder, because the people attend, the authors that attended this event, were they like, are they like self-published authors who are just like
it was a mix, because like I kind of did like a little a dive into it, and a lot of the authors they were like either independent or from like very small publishers. And it doesn't matter if you're like from like a big five publisher, a lot of the times authors are kind of left up to their own they're in charge of their own marketing, because that's just kind of how publishing has cut costs. So when you have an event that is promised to bring like 1,000 attendees, you think about sales, right? And you know, romanticy is such a popular genre. Like, it is all over TikTok, and it's like the genre that sweeps like bestsellers lists. So it's just like you automatically think there is an audience for this. It's a built-in audience for this genre. So of course a lot of people are going to come, and that it just sucks that, you know, they didn't get, like, they paid for their table, they paid for parking, and no one showed up.
Maybe I'm giving the organizer too much grace, but obviously they thought that they could pay for all the stuff, because if only 30 people attended, that's not a lot of budget to like buy the drinks and food and catering and all the amenities, right? So I'm sure like the budget was squeezed. I mean, I'm again giving the organizers too much grace. They could just be scammers, or they can just be like people who just had no idea what to do, what they were doing, right? But we see this also a lot with like food vendors, right? Like a certain city would say, "Oh, we're doing a farmer's market. We're doing like a food truck rally. There's gonna be thousands of people. You can totally hit your revenue goals for the day." And then, you know, the food truck shows up and no one's there, right? And like essentially they've lost the day of sales and the cost. Right. I think this is an issue with a lot of live events, is just over promising and under delivering. But in the end, all that hurts really is like the vendors.
Yeah. Yeah. And let me tell you, it was sad watching these videos of like people in ball gowns expecting to have like a great time, and they just walk into an empty gray conference room with no decorations. I'm like, really? You couldn't even get like fake flowers? Like what? Like you couldn't even get balloons from the dollar store? I think it's because you and I, like, we have experience in live events. So it's just like, oh, you can do so many things with so little money or something, or donations or something. But it seems like they were really out of their depth.
My gut feeling, they were not serious people. They're not serious organizers. Like, they probably just thought things would work out, and they didn't.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just sad. Speaking of sad, we're moving on to sadder news. I'm sorry, guys. It's just going to be bummer after bummer for the rest of this episode.
I don't think this is a bummer. This is kind of more of like Schadenfreude.
I mean, I told you it was right. Like sad and also funny, but yeah whatever. So our next piece of news is that Amazon's Audible unveiled plans to use AI for narrating and translating. And this was announced like yesterday, I think. So it's like pretty hot news. Audible stated on their website that there will be two options for publishers wishing to make use of the technology: Audible managed production or self-service, whereby publishers produce their own audiobooks with the help of Audible's AI technology. And of course, there is a lot of pushback of this because book narration, it's voice acting. It is like actual creative work. And what is it? Like in the article, Kristen Atherton, a narrator of over 400 audiobooks, told The Guardian that AI simply can't do what human readers can. The art, and it is an art, of a good audiobook is the crack in the voice at a moment of unexpected emotion, the wryness of good comedy timing, or the disbelief a listener feels when one person can convincingly be a whole cast of characters. No matter how human an AI voice sounds, it's those little intricacies that turn a good book into an excellent one. AI can't replicate that. And I 100% agree. If there's any other reason to stop with Amazon books, this is one of the big ones, one of the big reasons.
Yeah, it's kind of, it sucks because it really feels like the industry is doubling down on using AI to replace creative work, which I feel like AI was supposed to make things easier, right? Like in terms of doing mundane tasks that like people don't want to do. People want good narration. People want to do voice work. I think what's happening is AI has become a way for corporations to
cut costs,
be cheap, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I remember so there's a lot of voice actors out there who are not unionized or like freelancers. And some of them said like their voices were stolen and like the publisher like use their voice and used AI to narrate their books, and they found out later and they like were like, okay, like I'm gonna sue you because this is my voice, you clearly used it like to do narration and did not pay me. So
this was a big thing in like the lead up to like this whole like AI revolution, which is like a lot of like voice actors, a lot of actors were noticing in their contracts clauses that basically say they're signing away the rights to reproduce their voice. I remember this was a big deal a couple of years ago that a lot of my friends who are voice actors were like up in arms about. But, you know, there's probably a lot of people also who like just really want to work and don't read those contracts, right?
I mean, it is a very difficult industry to break into. And yeah, it just sucks that, you know, publishers think that they can replace voice actors with robots. And also it says for Audible is planning to use AI for narrating and translating. And I'm like, translating?
Yeah.
Like, is actually a field that, you know, like requires a lot of credibility. And I just don't think an AI can do an adequate job of capturing all of the nuances.
The optimist side of me says that this is just going to create shitty art that people are going to reject. But the cynical side of me thinks the average consumer won't care that it's shitty art. Because obviously, we all saw what happened with the Ghibli filter, right?
Yeah, but I just don't see anyone enjoying an AI narrated book based on like how AI voices are currently. So I don't know. I don't know. It's not pleasant to listen to.
Yeah, I mean, even with, you know, I listen to audiobooks at like 1.8, sometimes 2x speed. But even then, like it still sounds like someone's talking to you. Someone is inflecting. Someone is, you know, like, you know, really emoting the emotions in the prose. I don't think that's something that AIs can do. And if they can, that's going to require, like, you know, this isn't even talking about the, you know, the vast environmental impacts of just using AI.
Yeah. And like, it just really bothers me that a lot of aspiring creators, like really, really young creators who, you know, want to write books or create art, they turn to AI, they turn to ChatGPT for brainstorming sessions. And I'm like, no, you don't need that. Like, brainstorm on your own. Like,
just read
bouncing
more.
Back, yeah. Bouncing back with like a robot is not conducive to brainstorming. Bounce back with an actual human being. Also, those ideas are stolen, so you're really not.
I mean, again, this thing inside of me, they don't care, right? I feel like there's a lot of, it's human nature to want things to be as easy as possible. And what AI does, it, especially in like the content creation AI side of things, it's like, it takes away the need to have, for lack of a better word, talent, right? Or, you know, engagement, right? It's easier to push a button and get something that looks good than to like train a craft and train your skill. Right. So, I mean, the long range ramifications, you know, we won't see for another, like, you know, decade or so. But are we going to lose a whole generation of artists? Right. Or what does art even mean in the future? I think these are
we're going to lose that, a like, lot of American artists, because it seems like a lot of people who use ChatGPT are based in the U.S. it does. Like, I am a little bit concerned. But
yeah,
we're going to move on to more concerning news. Yay. So late last week, Trump abruptly fired Carla Hayden, the Librarian of Congress, despite her impressive record and years of bipartisan support. She received an email from Trent Morse, the Deputy Director of Presidential Personnel, which stated, "On behalf of President Donald J. Trump, I am writing to inform you that your position as the Librarian of Congress is terminated effective immediately." And obviously this created like a storm of controversy, because it's like, can the president fire the Librarian of Congress? It's not really under his jurisdiction. But Carla Hayden was appointed by Barack Obama and was the first African-American and first woman to serve as the Librarian of Congress. So this is definitely like an attack on like DEI from like the opposing side's view. The administration announced that Todd Blanche, a former Trump defense attorney who's now deputy attorney general, would serve as the acting Librarian of Congress. Two other DOJ officials, Brian Neves and Paul Perkins, were also announced to fill in the roles of acting deputy librarian and acting copyright register, respectfully. Now, I think this was like a couple days ago. So like when Neves and Perkins tried to enter what they consider to be their new offices, the library staff was like, haha, hell no. They balked and called the U.S. Capitol Police as well as their general counsel. And they told them to like leave because they were not allowed access to the copyright office. So now there's like this whole debate in Congress on whether or not the Trump administration has any authority to appoint anyone at the Library of Congress, which is under the legislative branch. And, you know, executive branch has like no authority to dictate staffing. So this is a big deal because Library of Congress is literally like our library, like our Library of Alexandria in America. Every single book that has been published is at the Library of Congress. Now think about the Copyright Office being taken over by the Trump administration and how Elon Musk wants his little AI to fucking scrape everything. So this is another, this is very concerning. And also, you know, with how everything is digitized these days, it is very easy to just delete books that you do not like.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like this has just been the story of the last like 4 months now, which is just authoritarian expansion of executive powers. Like, he's like a toddler trying to push his boundaries and seeing if people will push back. And what we need is people to push back. So, you know, I think the silver lining here, and I don't know how much of a silver lining is because I don't know how effective our politicians are at least at this point, but like, since the library is under the legislative branch, that means that your representatives, your senators have like power to push back. So, I mean, if there's any like, there's been plenty of reasons to call your representatives. This is definitely like a priority one, to tell them like, hey, you know, how about we not abdicate our powers given to us by the Constitution, the founding of our nation, and actually, you know, protect the separation of like powers, right? Because yeah, this is like, he'll get away with it if you let him. And
yeah,
there's definitely a lot of people who are willing to let him, right?
Yeah. And, you know, just like anti-intellectualism has been on the rise for the last like decade. And this is just kind of like, I don't know, like, I feel like this is like the last stand. And that's really depressing to hear. But that, like, we are in very dire straits right now. And it is comforting to know that librarians and also like park rangers are like at the forefront of, you know, pushing back against, you know, tyranny. But
yeah, yeah, I mean, it makes sense because, you know, at its core, those are professions that serve the people and not like a king, right? Or like not the executive. Like, they're there to perform a public service. And so their constituents, their stakeholders are the public. And so they very rightfully are fighting for to protect the public's interests. Which,
yeah, yeah. And it really concerns me on what future books are going to consist of, because is there going to be censorship? Like, are we going to become a nation where you criticize the government in your text even a little bit in like a fantasy parallel universe and they'll be like, nope, this is a banned book. Can't publish. It's like, that's where we're leading.
I mean, there hasn't been any update yet, but there is that Supreme Court case also about giving parents the legal right to opt out of books they don't think is appropriate for their children at school, right? And so that's another front of this like offensive to like really limit the ability of kids to, you know, empathize with other perspectives and cultures and point of views. And, you know, as people who, you know, we all grew up in a time when diversity was celebrated and we were encouraged to, you know, put ourselves in the feet in the shoes of other people. And, you know, especially as minorities, you know, we're always asked to do that because we read a lot of books by and about white people, right? And so I don't know, it's hard to stay optimistic or positive because of just all the shitty things that are happening, keep happening. And I mean, we're like not even a year in. We still got like 3 more years of this.
Oh my God. And I feel like it's been freaking 3 years. Like,
and I feel like a lot of people are like kind of hoping, okay, as long as we ride this out, everything will be fixed in 3 years. But like, that's what we thought the last time too. And
somehow Palpatine returned.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. So I guess, you know, just one more thing to keep an eye on in addition to all the other things that are happening, you know, bullshit at the health services, bullshit education. Like, it's really kind of I chose a great time to become a new parent. But hopefully, yeah, again, maybe this, like, again, going back on what I just said, but hopefully once my kids become old enough to go to school, things will get better.
We are at a time where, like, you should buy physical copies of books that you want to read, because there is no guarantee if, like, digitally they'll be available, because that is the easiest way to delete things. And, yeah, and you know, burning books is pretty much deleting things off of archives and the internet.
All right. I guess we'll check in next month, see where things go.
Oh, my God.
But yeah, thanks, Rira, for compiling this month's book and publishing news. Yeah, I guess that'll do it for this episode of Books and Boba. Thank you so much for sticking with us. Before we go, Rira, can you remind us what book we are reading for Book Club this month?
Yeah, so we are reading Blob, A Love Story by Maggie Sue. And it is kind of in the vein of Bunny and Convenience Store Woman. And it's about a young woman who tries to shape a sentient blob into her perfect boyfriend. So it is leaning into absurd territory.
Yeah.
But yeah, I call this Asian flubber, so we shall see.
I think it's less, it's funny, but it's not like slapstick like Flubber is. No, we're reading along on our Discord with our fellow Patreon supporters. And so far, it's been a lot of, I guess, what I can only call Midwest Asian issues. A lot of kind of just what happens to a young person's psyche when their family and support system refuse to talk about race with them. You know, definitely a book about Asian American identity, but with a blob that's slowly turning into a man.
This kind of sounds like a modern day version of Pygmalion, like based on the myth Pygmalion. Not like I'm not talking about the play or anything, because Pygmalion in the myth is a sculptor who falls in love with a statue he carves, and so I'm like, well, statue, blob, clay, yeah kind of similar.
Yeah. So we're looking forward to where the story goes. There has emerged a fake relationship angle, which is very interesting. Looking forward to discussing this with you at the end of the month. And, you know, as always, if you read along with us, please let us know your thoughts on Discord. And if you're not on Discord and have thoughts to share, please let us know on our Goodreads forums. As always, we'd love to include your feedback on our discussion episodes whenever possible. And yeah, don't forget that it is May. It is Heritage Month. And so we are doing our annual Asian Books Challenge on Instagram. So if you go onto our Instagram account, you can check out this year's book grid. This year's challenge is themed after The Wedding Banquet, Andrew Ahn's remake of Ang Lee's classic 1992 film. And it's been a lot of fun. It's really cool seeing everyone participate so far. And if you do participate in the book challenge, please remember to tag us at Books and Boba so we can share your book recommendations as well. That'll do it for this episode of Books and Boba. Thank you so much for listening. As always, we are a proud member of the Potluck Podcast Collective, so check out our fellow Asian American hosted podcasts by going to the website podcastpotluck.com. Thanks, everyone. We'll see y'all next time.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Books and Boba. This podcast was hosted by Marvin Yue and Rira Yu and edited and produced by Marvin Yue. Follow the book club on Twitter and Instagram by going to @booksandboba and engage with us on Goodreads on our Goodreads group. You can also check out past episodes of the podcast by going to booksandboba.com and by subscribing to us on your favorite podcast app. Don't forget, you can support Books and Boba and Asian American authors by purchasing books at our bookshop.org account. Check out the link in our show notes and also at booksandboba.com. Books and Boba is a proud member of the Potluck Podcast Collective, a collective of Asian American hosted podcasts featuring unique voices and stories from the Asian diaspora. Learn more about the collective and check out our fellow Potluck shows by visiting the website podcastpotluck.com. Thanks for listening.
Hey, sports fans. Welcome to Asians in Hockey. You may not realize it, but there's a rich history of Asians and AAPI folks who have contributed to the legacy of the greatest game on ice. From classic legends like Julie Chu and Robin Bawa, to current greats like Lia Lum and Nick Suzuki, and even rising stars like Akane Shiga and Jason Robertson. We'll cover their stories, celebrate their accomplishments, and learn about their impact on the sport of hockey. I'm Nate Nakao, former Beer League player, occasional youth hockey coach, and longtime hockey fan, and I'll be your host as we take a look at the rise of Asians in hockey. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pocket Casts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Part of the Potluck Podcast Collective.